Welcome back to the NP Dude. This is Jeff, the NP Dude. This is episode 14, and I am giving nurse practitioners a voice, and that is your voice, all of our voices. So please keep the comments and questions coming. I'm getting a lot of good comments about employment stuff. Just what's the status of who I am? And I did this show yesterday about the, or Sunday, I put it out, about exempt versus non-exempt employee status, but that opened a can of worms, so to speak, and I'm glad it did, because there's a lot of questions out there and a lot of good things we could talk about with respect to just what your employment status is as a nurse practitioner. And this one's for anybody. You can kind of apply this to any field, depending on how you enter into your employment with a company or a group or whatever. Okay, so today I'm going to talk more about that. So today we're going to go through what it is to be a contractor, what it is to be a contract employee, and what it is to be an employee at will. Those are the three different broad spectrum types of employment that you can have, especially as a nurse practitioner. And they have things that kind of overlap in language, and it can get very confusing as to what your status is and why it matters and does it matter. And so that's where we're going to go today. So keep the questions and comments rolling. It's really given me good ideas on what people don't understand. And I take that for granted, because for the last 15 years, it's been so ingrained in how I've been that I don't realize that others have that question. And to me, it might seem very, very basic, but it's not. And that's only because of the situation that I've been in. And if you're not familiar with who I am as the NP Dude, go back to episode one, listen to my intro. I'm getting a couple people hitting the intro, but not like it was in the first, in the first week. We're going into week three right now, starting week three. And, still getting great feedback. I'm hitting pretty consistent numbers on downloads, and it's great. It'd be interesting to see where we are in 6 months. So keep sharing the Facebook page. Tell your friends about the website. I'm getting a handful of good direct hits off Google now, which is kind of, I wouldn't have expected that, because I'm not going anywhere really but Facebook. Don't forget, you can get me on iTunes as well. And tell your friends that. So if they're listening on their iPhone and they're just cruising down the road, they can pull me up and listen right from there. And I have no way to track that, so I'm sure that's happening too to some degree. So what do we want to go through first? Let's start with an employee at will, because it's the most simple and most everybody knows what an at-will employee is. And you might hear my defogger going off because I'm cruising in the car and it's only 22 degrees out right now. But an employee at will is what you would think of if you worked at any basic job. You go to work at Home Depot or Lowe's, and you get a job, and you become an employee. You're folded into all the stuff that the company offers as far as benefits and all that good stuff. And you can terminate anytime you want. They can terminate anytime they want. And the way I view an employee at will relationship is, as the employee, I go to work today, and it's my interview for tomorrow. And if you keep that mindset, not only will you perform better, in my opinion, but you will keep the perspective that if I don't perform well, or if I'm a jackass, I'm going to get fired. That's an employee at will. Now, we'll go through the employee at will benefits. And I don't mean benefits like benefits package, but the good things about being an employee at will. When you're an employee at will, you get pretty much folded into the company as far as liability is concerned if you're not a professional. So NPs, this doesn't apply to you. You get your own malpractice because you still have to deal with that. But if you have, sorry, I'm driving. If you have, say you work at, let's use Lowe's again, right? You're working at Lowe's and you're driving the fork truck thing that they use inside the store, and you run over a little kid and squish him dead, right? So you could be personally liable for that, but your employment status as an employee at will, you're pretty much limited, and you're not going to have any money, so you're really not going to get sued. The company's going to get sued because they negligently hired somebody that doesn't know how to run a forklift. And that's why they have all the training manuals and all the safety ropes and all the other stuff, because they want to make sure that they're protecting themselves. That's why companies have to do all these stupid policies, because some kid somewhere once, 50 years ago, got squished by a tow motor. So that's kind of the benefit as an employee, is that that liability gets shifted into the employer. And it's not strict liability, but it's pretty darn close. Strict liability means it doesn't matter. The liability is automatically on the employer unless the employee really acted outside of the scope of employment, which we talked about before. And that's the same thing as scope of practice. I was using practice for nurse practitioners, but it's really scope of employment is the other word for that. So your employee at will status gives you that protection. So it's a limited liability type thing. The other thing that it's going to do for you as an employee is you're going to get all those benefits in the traditional sense. You get, if you're a full-time employee, you have to get the health insurance now. You usually are offered, as a matter of course, some kind of investment plan. You're offered usually a life insurance, small life insurance policy, and you might get, if you're lucky, some other perks. You know, discounts on things or preferential treatment for other things or whatever. My wife works for a hospital system, and they get some like free lab work done at the hospital. So that's kind of a nice perk, right? So you get your order, walk in, and it's free. It's kind of a good deal. So those are all the things you get typically as an employee, a strict employee. Now, why does it get confusing? Well, you can be a contract employee rather than just an employee at will. And a contract employee is what you would typically see in the nurse practitioner field. And the contract employee, you're going to have a contract that dictates the terms of the employment as a professional. You know, the term of the contract, how long you're going to be there, how many hours a week you're going to work, you know, what your pay schedule is going to be, if you can get some kind of a incentive plan based upon number of patients, you know, all that stuff. Whether you need to carry liability insurance and what the policy limits are. There's a ton of stuff that you can have in there. And I just read another one over the weekend for somebody. And it was probably one of the better contracts I've seen written for a contract employee. And it was long. It was like 26 pages long. And it was really thorough. But it was good. And there was no inconsistency. Somebody put some time and money into that document. And I was impressed. So now I have a good template. Thank you, know who you are, for sending that to me. So that was worth it to me. But the contract employee is kind of what you already are thinking as an NP. So you could be an employee at will, which is one of my jobs, and then the other one is a contract employee. So it gets kind of in between. But then it gets even more confusing because you could be a contractor versus an employee or... And I'm going to use employee in general sense because it's the first two that we already talked about. Those are employees. You fall under the umbrella of the company to some extent. But a contractor works differently. A contractor is the company doesn't want to deal with the headache of all of your benefits and all of the reporting crap that's required by our government to have an employee. Now, here's where I'm going to sidestep a little and go into the government. And you'll more you listen, you'll realize that I cannot stand our government because they're so overburdensome in the most of aspects of our lives. But the government will say, you know what? We need you to show us all the data and statistics about your employees. We need you to file certain tax forms. We need you to provide information for Social Security. You have to provide, proof of citizenship. You have to provide, that which is your I-9 form. You have to provide, all the Social Security tax information that's in there. I think I said that one. But there's just a bunch of crap that, as an employer, it just makes you not want to ever have an employee. If I wanted to start a company, just me personally, I would never want an employee because I don't have the time and the energy to figure out all the nuances of the rules to report every little thing that they want. Now, you get out of it somewhat if you're a small company because they have thresholds before they kick in. But you got to know what they are, and they change them, right? So Obamacare was 50, was the number of employees. So you might find companies out there that are, smaller companies pushing that threshold of 50 that want to contract with someone instead of hire them as an employee. And it's not a big deal, but they're pushing that burden onto you to do all of, well, not all of, but a lot of the reporting that needs to be done, especially with taxes. And I've never done this. I've never worked as a contractor. I've owned companies and I've done my own taxes and stuff like that. So I'm somewhat versed in it, but I am not a tax expert. I am not a CPA, and you know, I'm not a tax attorney. So see a CPA, see a tax attorney. If you ever are interested in going into a contract relationship with somebody, especially where you're going to be bringing in some serious coin, because then you need to make sure that you're reporting your taxes properly. And they changed the rules. And what I knew back in 2003 when I took, you know, tax law is probably different. So I'm qualifying that. This is not legal advice. I always have to qualify it. But that being said, we can kind of at least point you in the right direction on some of the things you need to look at as a contractor. So as a contractor, you have a company that calls you up and says, you know, we want you to come and work in our office as a nurse practitioner. However, I don't want to deal with all the crap that has to go with it. Maybe we have 48 employees right now, and I really don't want you as an employee, even as a contract employee, because then I have to report you as an employee, and I'm over the threshold. Then we have to get the Cadillac, you know, insurance policies, and then we have to do a whole bunch of other crap with wage and hour requirements and other things with, or not wage and hour, but with like the Warren Act if we need to lay people off. And there's a whole bunch of statutes that apply when you hit right around 40, 50, 25 employees. And it's a headache. So why deal with it? Well, that's what they may be trying to avoid. And they say to you, I want you here, but I can't do this with as an employee. And you're like, man, I just want a job. I don't want to have to deal with anything else. I want to show up. I don't want you guys to worry about taking out my taxes and all the other stuff that are the good things about being as an employee. And they say, we can't do it. All right, well, now what? How do you negotiate your contract cost? How do you deal with that? So my recommendation is you take out a piece of paper and you draw a line down the middle of the paper. And on the left side, you have costs. And then you have, on the right side, you have, you know, money in, like money in versus money out, right? And I don't want to say benefits, but cost on one side, your costs, and the benefits that they're going to give you is on the other side, which is basically your salary. And I use that word loosely because that's, I think we've talked about salary in the past in some of the other shows. So go back and listen to the other shows. Shameless plug there. So you have your salary that you want. So say you want to be paid as an employee, and I'm just going to make up numbers. Say it's $100,000 just to make it easy. So you put on the right side of the page $100,000. That's the number that you want right there. Okay. But to get that $100,000, you're going to have to pay your taxes, your employment tax, like your income tax, sorry. Well, you would have to pay that either way. So you don't need to put it on the list. So you don't really need to freak out about that. Maybe not yet. You might down the line. This is where the CPA comes in. But on the left side, you're going to say, well, what is it going to cost for me to do business as a contractor? Well, I need to hire a CPA, so write down that number. And that could be, you know, you could estimate it or you can go get a quote. Call up a guy and say, hey, I'm looking at a contract relationship, but how much is it going to cost for you to help me get set up? And they'll give you a price. They'll know. But it's probably going to be around, you know, say it's $500 bucks, $500 to $1,000 bucks, just to be safe. You're going to probably want to talk to your lawyer just to make sure you're safe there. Make sure that you got your insurances figured out and all that good stuff. So there's another, you know, say 1,000 to two just to be safe. So put that in your cost side. Then you're going to look at, okay, what are the other things that the CPA told me that I need to add in to my salary that the employer normally would pay that I don't even know that they pay? And Social Security tax is one of them. So we pay, and I believe it's we pay 3% out of our paycheck right now as an employee to Social Security. It used to be 1.5. I think that went away, and it bumped back up to the 3. But your employer also pays 3%. And that's a big number. If you're talking 100 grand, that's 3,000 bucks, right? So put 3,000 bucks down. You are already going to be paying the 3,000, you know, out of what your normal taxes would be for Social Security. So that's not something that they would be paying anyways. So don't put your half down, but put their half down. So in reality, you're going to be cutting a check for $6,000 to Social Security every year. It's kind of crazy, right? For what we get. All right. Sorry, I'm about to start venting on the government again. I don't want to do that. But anyways, that gets you at least your Social Security tax. Then what else can you have? You can have on that side, on the left side, you would have your health insurance. That's a big one, right? So you're going to want to get a health insurance, and I would get a quote on what it's going to actually cost for you to insure yourself the equivalent, maybe slightly better than what the employer, potential employer company that you want to contract with would get you. So if their plan really sucks and you're going with a Cadillac, then that's not really apples to apples. They may not know. So they're going to tell you what, you know, they pay. They may say, well, for a family of four, we'll pay, you know, we typically, it costs us $9,000. Well, you might want a plan that's $14,000. But you're going to want to get a quote on that and put that on the left side. That's a cost to you that you have to pay that they would have otherwise paid. And that's the threshold that you want to use. Is it something that you are going to have to pay or deal with that they otherwise would deal with? So there's that. Now you've got investments, right? The other benefit that you typically get when you get an employment relationship. Well, you usually take out, you know, 5%, 3%, 10%, whatever it is, out of your paycheck to invest in a 401k or 403b. But that's not really their money. That's your money. You're taking that out. So it's the same as you going and getting like a, you know, a Roth IRA or something. So, or doing your investments. And I'm not an investment guy, so don't trust me on that one either. You're going to want to talk to your investment advisor or your banker and see what, you know, maybe what kind of costs are associated with establishing maybe your own 401k or 403b. And I've seen people do that. But there's an administrative cost associated with that. You could put that in the left column as well, if that's what you want to do. But your companies will often have some kind of a match. So if you contract for a period of time that's longer than what it is for the threshold to kick in to for the match. So what I mean is, like, you work for an employee for a year and then you're eligible for a 3% match on your 401k. Well, you have a contract term that's maybe 2 years. That means that in theory, for a year, you should be getting some kind of a match in your 401k. So you could get a 3% match. So that's up to you. Do you want to try to put that in there? It depends on how much negotiating power you have and how bad they want you. But you could probably get another, you know, if it's 3% of your salary, there's another $3,000 that you could get dumped in. But guess what? That's pre-taxed. So you got to make sure that it's compensated enough for your taxes, which is going to be around 40%, 45%. So add 45% to the 3% match and add that on the left column. And this is where the CPA is going to help you with more exact numbers. But you can get the idea that you're going to be, put it on as an item to think about. Don't forget to ask about, you know, matched 401k value. They're not going to put you in their 401k. That's not what they're going to do. And I'll explain why in a moment. So keep this philosophy up. Go through all the things that you can think of that you will have to deal with, including the headache of dealing with it and the time for you to deal with it. So every quarter, you're going to be paying your own income taxes. And you got to remember to do it. Is it a big deal? No, but you got to make sure that you're spending the time keeping track of how much you're making, doing your own books, or hiring your accountant CPA to do it for you and paying them. So those costs or time associated with your cost, and guess what? At the end of a workday, when you've worked 10 hours seeing patients, the last thing you want to do is do accounting. So the value that you get doing your NP job or whatever it is your day job is, I say add 1.5 times that to manage the rest. And think about how much it's going to be throughout the year and say, this is my administrative cost for me to deal with these. The time for me to go sit down with my CPA, the time for me to go deal with the attorney. That's all included. Now you're talking your insurances. Those all get thrown in there if your company that you're going to be contracting with would have otherwise paid for your insurance. Any licenses that you have, fees, CMEs, CME time, all that stuff should be compensated for if the employer or contract company you're contracting with would have otherwise. See what I'm doing? It's the same language over and over again. Use that language in your mind when you're looking at things and say, would they have otherwise paid for this? So once you get your list done, and I'm not going to try to go through anything else because I'm on the freeway and I'm almost getting run over. But if you go through that list and you come up with your number on the left side of the column, and those are all true numbers that the company would have paid, you're going to just basically add that to the right. And then you know what I would do? I'd add 10% to it for negotiation, fluff. And then I have another 10% And trust me, this is how business works, and that's the way it, you know, I mean, if you're astronomical in your costs, then you go in and say, this is what the number is. At least you know what you're looking at and whether you're willing to take the deal or not. But add another 10% for profit, lost time that you stuck doing your job that you otherwise would have been paid for. So you're basically going to add 20% to your total number. Total number. That's what businesses do. As an engineer, this is what we did. We would find our actual cost to do a job. We would add 10% and add 10% again. And that gives you that buffer. If things go a little bit sideways, then you can deal with it. And just treat that as contingency in case you need to buy out of the contract if it's a bad deal, or you know, you can't work there anymore for whatever reason and you need to break the contract, or your, you know, spouse is moving into a different company in another state and you got to get out of it and you got to pay your way out of this thing. So that's the difference between the employees and the contractor. Now, what as far as getting the number, it's going to be astronomically high, but think your company that you would be employed with, they pay like 50% more, 40% more than what you're getting in salary. So when you get your paycheck and you say, oh, well, I made $100,000 last year, and I'm just using that as a generic number, in reality, that you were a cost to the employer of around $150,000. And as an employee, you never realize that. So that's why people are hesitant to hire people, because it is a significant cost. And you got to be productive to be able to compensate for that. So that's why today is your interview for tomorrow when you're an employee at will. So why do I care? What's the difference between being an employee and a contractor? We already talked about the differences between the employee at will and the contract employee. But the employee at will, or I'm sorry, the employee relationship versus the contractor relationship, similar to the employee at will and this is why it gets confusing. It's similar in nature to the employee at will and the contract employee in that they use the same standards to determine whether you're a contract employee or a contractor. It's a lot of the same words. And it's things like, if you haven't listened, go back and listen to episode, I think it's 13, where I talked about this, where you have the contract employee, whether you're an exempt employee versus a non-exempt employee. It's kind of the same language. And that's what I mean to compare. Sorry, I'm in a lot of traffic right here. But the exempt employee versus non-exempt employee, you're going to have that question of, did you have control? Were you a professional? All that stuff. Well, you don't have to be a professional, but it's a question of control. So if you have a contractor that you hire and you are trying to get out of paying, you know, for Obamacare, and you have 49 employees and this is number 50, and the last thing I want to do is get stuck paying these gold standard premiums and all that stuff, and it's going to jack up my, you know, costs and all the other reporting, and it's a nightmare, and I don't want to do it, period. I'm not doing it. So I hire a guy, and I call him a contractor, but he's in my 401k, and he comes to work in my office, and I tell him what to do, and I give him the tools to do it, and I say, here, go. And he does. He does a great job. But then the IRS, IRS, because they're the ones that are managing the Obamacare, right, enforcement, they come in and say, no, you really have 50 employees. And they say, no, I got a contract here that says he's a contractor. Doesn't matter. They go by de facto, which means of fact. It's what it is. It's not what you call it. You can call a pizza, you know, a can of spaghetti sauce, but it's really not the same thing. It's still a pizza. You can call a rocket ship to the moon, you know, a billboard sign, because I see a billboard sign right there. It doesn't matter. It's not a billboard sign. It's a rocket ship, right? I mean, it is what it is what it is, not what you call it in the eyes of the law. So why do we care? Well, it's for all those same reasons as the benefit of being a contract employee versus a contractor. A contractor, you lose all benefits, right? You don't have any relationship with that company other than the fact that they're going to give you a check with money in it, and they're going to give you a form at the end of the year called a 1099. Everything else is your responsibility. Now, they may allow you in the contract in some way to use their office space, to use some of their equipment, things like that. But the more they let you use of theirs and the more direction they give you, the more it smells like you're an employee. And that's when the IRS and the wage and hour people, the FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act may kick in. And so that's when that status might change. And there's tons of case law on this, and it's probably different than what it was when I was in law school. But the difference is that you are on your own. You're your own person. You deal with all your own headaches as far as administrative, and they cut you a check at the end of whatever period is that you negotiate in your contract. It's the guy that comes in and remodels your bathroom. I'm not telling him how to do it. I'm just telling him what I want at the end of the day. If he wants to rip the tub out first or take the sink out first, it doesn't matter to me. It's however he needs to do it to get it done. Now, I might say you have to be done in a certain period of time, and you have to, I only want these types of materials or, things like that. But that's just part of the contract. That's not telling them how to do it. That's telling them what to do, what things you want. And you see, and I can be careful because what to do is telling them how to do it too, right? So that's where it gets gray. That's kind of the big difference between the contractor and the employee relationship. And again, the employee is what we already talked about. Now, the difference here is a contract employee versus a contractor is that the contract employee can be contracted to have the benefits of the employees, right? So you might have written in your contract as a nurse practitioner that says your term is this, your pay is this, your incentive is that if you have one, and you must maintain insurance and all that stuff. But then they say, well, you can still considered an employee, so you fall within the benefits of the company. So you get the 401k, you get the health insurance, you get the, all the stuff that they would offer to their employees, and the policy book that goes with the company applies to you, all that stuff. So that's the major difference, right? But the contractor, you're on your own, and you got to pay your own taxes every 3 months. You got to keep track of it, and as a guy that just wants to go to work and see patients right off the bat, I really don't want to deal with all that headache. I just don't. Now, would I if the deal was right? Yeah, but my number would have to be pretty high because I like my free time. I don't want to be managing my quote-unquote company. Now, there's one little thing I want to talk about that's left on that, and it's related to the contractor status, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it but not get into it today because I think I could have a whole other show, probably a series of shows, on what you should do as far as a company structure if you are a contractor. And you'll hear a ton of different advice out there. You'll hear people say that you need to be a limited liability company, or if you're in with another guy or a girl, you should be a limited liability partnership, or you should be a corporation, and you can file as an S corp with your taxes, which is different. You're not an S corp. You're a corp, and you file as an S corp. That's a nuance, but I hate it when people say that. I'm an S corp. You're not an S corp. You're a corp. Why do I want to mention that? Because those are ways that you can limit your liability for some things that you do in your company. If you're going to be a contractor, you might as well form a company. It's only like $150 to set it up through your state secretary, Secretary of State. But you're probably going to want to pay an attorney to do that. You don't need to, but you probably want to, just to make sure you're not missing anything, just so you have that peace of mind. And they're usually a couple $100 to get filed. But here's why. If you're driving to your... Oh, and that's another thing. And the good benefit of being a contractor is you can write all your mileage off. Whereas if you're an employee or even a contract employee, your mileage to your main office... So I drive like 50 miles to one of my jobs. I can't write that mileage off. Now, I could write it off if I drive from one office to another, but I can't do it if I'm driving from home to office. But as a contractor, the minute you leave the door to go to quote-unquote work, that's part of your employment, so or as part of your contract. You basically, as a contractor, you get to write that off, and that could be pretty big. So if you're driving like me, 55 cents a mile or whatever it is this year, that can add up, right? I mean, that could be a lot of dough that you get to write off of your taxes, which decreases your taxable income. So that was a side note. But why does it matter as a company? Because when you're driving, and this is where I was going, if you're driving down the freeway, not practicing your practice of nurse practitioner or professional engineer or whatever it is that you would know, attorney, whatever it is that you've got a license for in malpractice insurance for, if you're just driving down the road and you run over a family of four, you're not going to have the issue of direct liability if you're acting within your scope of the company. If you're acting on behalf of the company, you're limited in liability to the company's assets, not your personal assets. So you can do that, but now here's the reality. You're probably going to have a general liability policy, and that's why I want you to see your attorney on this. They'll guide you through what you want as far as policies. But a general liability policy for a company is a couple hundred bucks a year, like $300 a year is the last quote I got for a general, and it was like $1 million policy, and it covers you for, you know, just doing stupid crap in the course of doing your business. Not like malpractice of seeing patients, but just something incidental that happens, but you're doing it on quote-unquote company time, and your malpractice doesn't kick in, and your auto policy doesn't kick in. That's where your general liability policy can kick in. So you really want three different policies. You got your policy for your auto, your policy for general liability, and your policy for your malpractice, right? So that's where all the stuff that adds in as a contractor. And you're going to add that up. And that's going to be another one that goes in your line item on your left side of your column when you do your contractor cost. How much is your general policy? So there's some things to think about. I'm driving, so I do apologize. I'm not good at driving and talking and, you know, figuring things out. And there's a school bus right in front of me, and, you know, kids are looking at me like I'm insane because I'm talking. But this, I hope it guides some people, gives some basic understanding of the different types of employment status. And if you guys have more questions or it's not clear, always leave a comment and say, Jeff, you don't know what you're talking about, or Jeff, I can't understand what you're talking about. It doesn't make sense to me. Please leave a comment. I approve all comments unless they're spam. I don't care. If it's good, bad, or indifferent, I'm going to approve it. Because I want people to, if you have that question, most likely there's 10,000 other people that if we get to those numbers that I'm hoping to, are going to have a similar question and say, Jeff, you didn't really explain it right. Or Jeff, you really missed the boat. Or Jeff, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So leave a comment below. Leave comments on the Facebook page. You can always email me, Jeff@TheNPDude. You can also like and share as much as possible. Keep it going. It's still increasing. It hasn't really dropped off. I'm slowly. It was a huge spike at the beginning. I had one crazy day last week where you guys were crazy listening, and then we've just been kind of steadily growing. So keep it going. I'm really, really excited about this. Having a great time. It's been a lot of fun. And don't forget, you can listen to me on iTunes as well. Thanks again for listening, guys. This is the NP Dude, giving nurse practitioners a voice.